Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, welcome back then. Yesterday on this programme, we heard from the Taoiseach on the Vulture Funds, the Cuckoo Funds buying up estates in this country. We were reflecting for the last week or so on Mullan Park in Maynooth, what's happened there. Of course, what's emerged now in the hottest topic of the moment is the idea. This didn't begin today or yesterday. It's been going on for a number of years. Here's a flavour of what the Taoiseach told us yesterday in regards to his attitude towards these institutionalised or institutional investors, or as we colloquially call them, cuckoo funds.
What I think would be a mistake would be an outright ban on investment funds.
Why?
Quite simply because there's a huge number of developments in Ireland, particularly in our cities, particularly apartment developments, that simply would not have happened if it wasn't for the finance that comes from investment funds. They would not have been built, and if they weren't built, we would have fewer apartments, we'd have higher rents, and we'd have more homelessness. And, you know, investment funds make up less than 1%.
And therefore, implicit in what you're saying, therefore, is you're asking vulture funds to pick up what the government should be doing in the first place.
Well, you know, the government never financed the construction of private housing. You know, the government builds social housing, and that's what we do, and we should do, and we're doing more of it all the time. Over 1,000 units built recently in Kildare. It's never been the case that the government, you know, financed the building of private housing. That was traditionally done by the banks. The banks are a shadow of their former selves, and investment funds, to a certain extent, have come in to fill that gap. And I think where they're financing, you know, a new block of apartments or high-density development that wouldn't have been built otherwise, that's one thing. But when they come in and buy, you know, a whole estate that was already finished or substantially finished, like they did in Maynooth or like they did in Hollystown, that's a very different thing.
Mixed message then from the Taoiseach, saying on the one hand we need them, but maybe not the buying up of estates. Roxy repeated in the Dáil later in the day. That was Taoiseach Leo Varadkar yesterday morning. Owen O'Brien is the Sinn Féin spokesperson on housing. He's also Dublin Midwest TD. Good morning, Owen.
Good morning, Clem. How are you?
Thank you for joining us again. I heard Paul Cunningham on the television last night quote you as saying the stupidest thing you have ever heard, this idea of, I presume you were referring to, cuckoo funds, that we need them, and the leasing of housing estates back to the local authorities, etc., etc. What do you make of the whole thing?
Yeah, so first of all, there are two factual inaccuracies in what the Taoiseach said. For decades, government supported working families to build and buy their own homes. They did that by grant aid, and they did it by long-term low-interest finance to local authorities. In fact, our grandparents' generation, if they went in good quality council homes, probably built or bought their own home with direct assistance from government. So the Taoiseach is wrong about that.
The Taoiseach, I presume.
Apologies.
Well, you're not that. I kept referring to Mr. Taoiseach
sure
yesterday.
I'm never sure which of them is actually in charge.
I know, it's a kind of a Freudian thing, yes.
It's probably Fine Gael are in charge, we think that. But the second point is this. A lot of the apartment developments that the Taoiseach referred to there in Dublin city centre actually haven't resulted in rents going down. They've pushed rents up. And because the rents are so high, they're actually one of the contributors to homelessness. But let me deal with the core issue here. It is not acceptable for a fund of any kind to step in to a development that was originally intended for private owner occupation and then buy that in bulk and rent it back either to working families or local authorities at exorbitant rents. That is not acceptable. The problem is it has been going on for years. It is not a new phenomenon. Only a year ago, my own constituency in Adamstown, Cairn Home, sold almost 300 duplexes and apartments that were originally intended to go in the private market for working families to buy. And this has been happening for years. It is a direct result of government policies, particularly on the taxation front, that were introduced by Fine Gael and Labour when Michael Noonan was the minister, and have been supported by Fianna Fáil. And the reason I say supported by Fianna Fáil is my colleague Piers Doherty, whenever finance bills come up each year, tables amendments to end these outrageous tax advantages to institutional investors, and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have voted them down. So what we need is two things. First of all, we need to end those tax advantages. I mean, it is completely unacceptable that a mom-and-pop landlord who maybe has one or two properties and is doing a good job pays an effective rate of tax on the rent roll of 40%, and pays full capital gains tax if they sell the property. But these institutional investors pay no corporation tax, no tax on the rent roll, very low stamp duty, and if they sell the development at a future point in time, and many of them intend to do that, they pay no capital gains tax.
And that very point, Owen O'Brien, I put that very remark to the Taoiseach twice during the conversation yesterday, and each time he replied, changes have been made to the tax regime.
Not on these very specific areas. And let's be very clear, these aren't loopholes. Michael Noonan and his Secretary General of the Department of Finance at the time, John Moran, lobbied by a range of property interests who wanted the real estate investment trust vehicle that was coming to prominence in the US to be legislated for in Ireland, made these changes, and the intention was to bring these funds in. But there is another change that I also think we do need to make, because we need to fix this once and for all. When you're putting in a planning application as a developer, you put in an application to say the number of houses, the types of houses, the design of houses. But there's no requirement of you to say if these are going to be houses for sale to owner-occupiers, or homes to rent, or a mixture. I do think we need to start looking at reform of our planning system so that all future planning applications, a developer is obliged to say, well, is this a rental development, is it a for sale development to individual owner-occupiers, or is it a mixture of both? And then your local authority's planning department could then assess, okay, well, in this area, what is the need? Is there a need for some rental? Is there a need for more owner occupation? So I do think we need to get rid of the tax advantages now. We need to look at emergency legislation to put a halt to this block buying of residential developments that were originally intended for owner occupation sale. But we also need a more profound reform of our planning system.
And all of that is very desirable in the eyes of most people, and most people then the word timeline springs up and how long it's going to take this. And meanwhile, we have what's going on the market where people are actually being excluded by these vulture funds. Let's face it, they have no social responsibility. Their absolute prime motivation for existing is profit, and that's what they're making on the backs of two ways, because they're buying up this, they're exacerbating the prices of housing because they're paying above the margins. They're then leasing them back at exorbitant rental rates to local authorities who are then paying these rents using taxpayers' money. So it seems all around the taxpayers have been flaked out and fleeced on all of this. Why can't we just immediately bring in something without the needs for the long-term legislation that bans these vulture funds from at least buying up residential property, whatever about commercial property?
So two things. The first thing is the quickest way to do that is to end their tax advantages. So government, for example, next week could bring an emergency legislation to change the tax advantages, and that would bring a halt to these kind of purchases. Because when a fund buys a block of houses and duplexes, as they've done in Maynooth, they're doing it because they have such favourable tax treatment. It's incredibly profitable for them to do it. If you take away those tax advantages, they'll stop doing it. So that is the quickest way. The second thing is, and this is what I was referring to last night in the Dáil, the stupidest way of funding social housing that I've ever heard of. As you know, local authorities acquire 10% of all private developments for social housing, and the Minister is proposing to increase that to 20% for it to be social affordable. Fully agree with that. But at the moment, we're seeing an increasing number of local authorities not buying those units at a discount, but entering into 25-year leases at a very high cost. And we've seen, for example, some of the recent leases in Fingal, they're costing €18,000 per unit per year. In Dunleer, around €28,000 per unit per year. That means you're actually paying between €500,000 and €700,000 for those units. The Minister tomorrow, at the stroke of a pen, could issue a directive to local authorities saying no more long-term leasing of Part 5 units. They are to be bought to ensure that there's always going to be social housing and private housing development. So there are emergency things that can be done now, and
okay,
so we should do those quickly.
And in fairness, I put it to the Taoiseach yesterday, and I pinned him down on that issue when he said, yes, we will make changes. Micheál Martin said the sale of large tract of land to new developments for investment funds, and I quote, he said, it's unacceptable and not consistent with government policy. And that indeed was echoed by the Taoiseach on the programme yesterday. And when I pushed him for when these changes would happen, he twice, on two occasions, said these changes can take place within weeks. Do you see that happening?
If there is political will, that is absolutely the case. My only concern, Clem, is that four different government ministers were out in the media yesterday saying they were going to do four different sets of things. So we had the Taoiseach, we had the Taoiseach, so we had the Minister for Housing, and we had the Minister for Finance. In fact, we also had the Minister for Health saying something else. So there's a lot of confusion. So I suppose, look, we want to be helpful in the opposition. If government is serious about tackling this issue and they bring forward constructive proposals, we'll work with them and we'll get them through as quickly as possible. What we won't tolerate is government saying they're going to do something, but either not doing it or bring forward something for the optics that doesn't fix the problem. We need emergency measures now to halt these block sales, and we need the further reforms to make sure that we weed this out of our planning system overall. What we also need, however, is this. Government needs to step up the plate to the plate and dramatically increase investment in the direct delivery of high-quality, affordable homes that working people can rent and buy at genuinely affordable prices. And Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar can talk all they want about home ownership. If they are not funding, through our local authorities and AHBs, good quality affordable homes, then nothing is going to change. And that's why, for me, the idea that the Taoiseach says the government never supported people to own their own homes, it just shows he doesn't know what government has done in the past and what it needs to do in the future. So direct investment, large-scale delivery of affordable homes for working people to rent or buy, that's more than anything else what's needed to tackle the affordability crisis that's plaguing not just our city centres, the commuter belt, but almost now every county, town and village in the country.
And can I just finally say one point for you, from you briefly, Eoin Óibrín, in terms of that, is that when Michael Noonan brought in that scheme back in 2011, the whole construction sector was on the floor. We had to stimulate. It was a way of stimulating the construction sector. It worked then. It was primarily aimed at apartment blocks, commercial property and whatever else. Has the government basically been backdoored on this, that they never, it's a case of unintended consequences. It was never intended that these vulture funds would move into the buying up the residential market.
Well, two things. First of all, when it was first introduced, it was introduced to deal with commercial assets, and particularly the toxic assets that had been transferred, or their debts had been transferred to NAMA, and they were mainly land, hotels, commercial buildings, and some residential. The problem is, very, very quickly, so by 2014, 2015, these funds were entering into large-scale residential development. And let's not make a mistake to say that somehow there's a difference between suburban homes and homes in our city centres. People who want to live and work in the city centre also have a right to be able to buy at affordable prices. And while we are going to have far more apartments in our city centres, and there's good reasons for that, this idea that they should all be for rent or city centre dwellers are more transient and more comfortable with renting is not the case. Government should ensure that people are able to buy or rent depending on what they feel is their need. And therefore, we need good quality affordable homes to rent or buy in our city centres, good quality affordable homes to rent or buy out in the counties. And what we also have to stop is the sprawl of Dubliners into the commuter belt, because what that is doing is pushing up land prices and house prices in Meath, Kildare, and South Louth, and North Wicklow. And that then is displacing the populations of those counties to the west or south and north of those counties, further pushing up house prices. So there's a whole series of things we have to get right. But city centres need affordable homes to buy, as well as in the suburbs, as well as in Kildare and other commuter belt counties.
And we know all about it here in Kildare, I can tell you. Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Midwest and party spokesperson on housing, Eoin Óibrín. Good morning, Margot Eoin.
Have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you indeed for your time. Right, we'll continue our coverage of this indeed on Monday when we'll speak to a social policy expert on that as well. Clem, I got my vaccine yesterday. I couldn't fault the staff in any way. Well organised, in punches down, well done all. Regarding communions and confirmations, and I talked about marching in the Corpus Christi parade, holding a bunch of flowers. Clem, I remember walking all around the cemetery with the flowers a long time ago, says another listener says, I made my confirmation on the 6th of May 1969. I remember it like yesterday. And yet another listener says, Asher, Clem, you still have the first communion money indeed. Regarding the wedding of the year, and that message didn't finish, so I don't know what it is. Just wondering, Clem, in regards to the Longford case, will the judge seek records of the lease and tax contract? Well, it'll be interesting because, by the way, according to the report in The Independent today about that particular Longford case, which has been called up before the courts again for Monday, and where the owner of the marquee who leased it said he was very, very sorry about it. He's named as a 41-year-old Alan Horrero, which is a surname I've never heard of in my life, H-O-R-O-H-O-E. And the paper reports that he settled an €87,000 tax bill with the revenue last year for non-declaration of income tax, POI, PRSI, USC and VAT. And he, Mr. Horro is quoted as saying, what happened last week was one of his more foolish moves. I'd have thought an even more foolish move was owing $87,000 to the revenue, but sure, who knows anyway. After the break, Owen is going to tell us the good news about the Derrin Turin Wastewater Treatment Plant, and Ger McNally joins us to tell us about the 2021 Kildare Senior Football Panel announced last night.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
In about 2 minutes' time, we'll reflect on a 32-man panel announced by Kildare senior football manager Jack O'Connor last night. But first, Owen, we had to defer this item from yesterday. The Derrin Turin Wastewater Treatment Plant, Irish Water confirming it's been selected for upgrade as part of the Small Towns and Villages Growth Programme.
Yeah, absolutely. So the investment in the local wastewater infrastructure, we're told, will provide additional capacity for the development of new homes while ensuring that wastewater continues to be treated as or to an appropriate standard. Details of other towns and villages to be included in the programme, if any, will be announced in the coming months. Elaine Heenahan is Irish Water's regional forward planning specialist. She said, "We are pleased to confirm that this important project to improve wastewater treatment capacity in Derrin Turin has been given the green light. This will bring big benefits to the area by ensuring the infrastructure is in place to meet the needs of the village as it continues to grow." She goes on to say the purpose of the Small Towns and Villages Growth Programme is to support growth in smaller towns and villages. Derrin Turin was selected following detailed consultation with the local authority to identify and prioritise areas for investment. The project will now continue through the next stages, including the design, detailed planning, procurement and approvals, and we'll get further updates as that comes to us.
Thank you indeed. Owen, you might throw up that panel as well, because I'm not sure I'll get through 32 names in regards to this, but Jack O'Connor announced his Kildare Senior Football Panel last night. Let's tell you who the 32 are. It includes a couple of what are called development players, which is a new one on me. Ger McNally might be able to identify who the development players are. I can stab at one or two, but we'll see. Anyway, I'll leave it to the experts, and the panel is as follows: Aaron Masterson, Moorfield, Adam Steed, St. Lawrence's, Alex Burnace, Barry Kelly, Athai, Brian McLaughlin, Clane, Chris Byrne, Clane, Con Kavanagh, Sarsfields, Connor Hartley, Sarsfields, Daniel Flynn, Johnstown Bridge, Dara Ryan, Sarsfields, Dara Kerwin, Nace, Dara Malone, Alan Wood, David Highland, Athai, and Owen Doyle, Nace.
Yeah, if we go on then, Fergal Conway, Selbridge, Jack Robinson, Clocharinco, Jack Sargent, Eadstown, James Robinson, Round Towers, Jimmy Highland, Ballyteague, Kevin Feely, Athai, Kevin Flynn, Selbridge, Liam Power, Raheens, Luke Flynn, Johnstown Bridge, Mark Dempsey, Moorfield, Mark Donlan, Maynooth, Mark Glynn, St. Lawrence's, and Mick O'Grady, Selbridge, Glen.
Neil Flynn, Maynooth, Niall Kelly, Athai, Paddy Brophy, Selbridge, Paddy McDermott, Nace, Paul Cribben, Johnstown Bridge, Ryan Houlihan, Moorfield, Shane O'Sullivan, Clane, and Shea Ryan, Sarsfields. Let's reflect on that. I suppose it's not a case maybe of who's in. Maybe many of the veterans, if we call them at this stage, are all named there. Maybe who's not in it. I'd like to welcome back our match commentator, Ger McNally. It's been so long, indeed, since we spoke. Is it nearly a year at this stage, Ger McNally?
It is, Clem, yeah, God, it seems like a long, long time, but yeah, thankfully things are starting to turn back to normal, and when we're kind of picking the bones out of the Kildare squad, it definitely feels like a big step back towards normality.
Yeah, actually, I need to bring up one thing with you first, because I'm wondering, have I permission to talk to you? Because I now note from your email that you seem to have a professional agent representing your publicity interests. Are you now a celebrity?
Oh, yeah, that's it, Clem, yeah, I've got through my agent now to book me from now on.
Yeah, so on BT told me this morning. We're only joking, folks, in case people get carried away, but he did stick an agent's name at the bottom of his email this morning. I suppose, Ger, what do you make of the panel?
Yeah, well, either I'm getting older or the panel is getting younger. It's definitely a younger panel, and it has a real flavour of youth, I suppose, to it. Looking at it, apart from backup goalkeeper James Robinson, only Owen Doyle is over 30, and he's actually the only player over 28 on the squad, I think. So it's definitely a nod towards youth. there's an influx of those under 20 championship winners from a couple of years ago back in 2018 onto the panel. Two or three more of those have joined the panel, and some even younger. You mentioned those developmental players that are involved, three of them. They weren't identified, but just taking a stab at it, the three youngest players on the panel will be Alex Byrne, Jack Sargent and Paddy McDermott, and that they would all be part of an ACBS successful school side, and kind of earmarked from a young age to be part of a senior panel. But maybe if they're not quite on the panel this year, you could imagine that they'll be a big part of Kildare's future going forward. But yeah, elsewhere, I suppose it's now time for the likes of Paul Cribben, Daniel Flynn. You know, these are established members of the squad now. Owen Doyle obviously is there a long time. David Hyland is captain again this year with Mick O'Grady, vice captain. So they are now the leaders of this squad, and that they're the ones that are going to set the standards for these young players coming onto the panel. And yeah, but it is a young panel, and top heavy with forwards, I would have said too. It's kind of hard to pick a back line. Shea Ryan is suspended for the first game against Cork as well, following a red card against Meath last year, so that's an extra defender missing too. There's a couple of injury doubts still. Fergal Conway is not back in full training. He has done some training with the squad, but not quite back in full training after a knee injury. Jack Robinson still has issues with his hamstring. He's going to be out for the first couple of league games at least, and Niall Kelly is a couple of weeks away then as well from full contact training. He's still getting over an injury he picked up in the county final for the Tyne last year, a bad Achilles injury that needed an operation. So he's on the way back and close to being back in full contact training, but he won't be considered for the first game against Cork.
And Ger and the three games, of course, are away to Cork in Semple Stadium in Thurles, and then home to Clare and away to Laois, as we say, beginning not this coming weekend, but the football action gets underway the following weekend with Kildare and Cork playing, I think it's on the Saturday. But Ger, any notable names missing from that panel that you've noticed?
Yeah, well, Ben McCormack won't be able to commit this year due to work commitments, so he's probably a high-profile absentee from the squad. Aaron O'Neill also recently picked up an injury that'll rule him out for the season too at training, so he's another loss too. Matty Bourne as well will be going away on a tour of duty with the Defence Forces in a couple of weeks, so he won't be involved either. And then, of course, there was the high-profile retirees from last year as well, the likes of Keith Cribben, Tommy Mulick, Peter Kelly and Johnny Bourne, although Johnny Bourne, I think, is going to link up with David Herity's hurling squad as well, so he's a big boost for the hurling squad, but a miss for the footballers. So they're, I suppose, the main players, I think, that aren't involved in this year's squad that were there last year.
Well, you know what, Chair McNally, when I hear your voice, I hear we're a step closer to normality again. And that I hope we can afford your agency fees, and that you're getting carried away with that Everton stuff and you know, and transfer fees and that. But great to have you back on board, Ger, and thank you for your time this morning. And Ger, who presides now over the whole affairs of the Carlow Nationalists, thank you indeed. He'll be with us as our match commentator on the football and indeed the hurling, where Pat Costello will be stepping in occasionally as well this season. Now, thank you indeed, Ger. We let you go on that. The monthly CSO figures have been announced regarding those for April. And Owen, you can take a quick look at those for me.
Yeah, I think Ciara Noble as well joins me to have a look at those figures, Clem, in relation to the unemployment figures which were announced for April of 2021. And we can go to the newsroom now and Ciara Noble.
Thank you, Owen. Yeah, so obviously each month we hear this. So the unemployment rate of all persons was 5.8%. That was unchanged from March 2021 and up from 4.7% in April 2020. Looking at the figures by sex for people, both male and females, breaking it down by age. Sorry, here the employment rate was 15.9% for people aged 15 to 24 and 4.8% for people aged 25 to 74 years of age, which is quite an age if you're still working. Obviously, 65 is the usual age to retire at. If you just break it down in comparison to this time last year, the number of people unemployed was 110,000. This year, April 2021, it's 134,000 people. So that's an increase there of about 1.1%.
Yeah, and interestingly there, Ciara, that's a 5.8% unemployment rate. We've heard a commentary during the year that it could be a couple of years before we return to pre-pandemic unemployment numbers in regards to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't really know when everything will be back to normal, Clem. There's no end date, I guess many would say. Then obviously in terms of the monthly unemployment estimates, it says that the amount of people who were not working due to the pandemic unemployment payment was quite large this month. Claimants of PUP were classified as unemployed, obviously, and the rate for the adjusted measure of unemployment indicates a rate of 22.4% for all persons,
yeah,
a rate of 21.9% for males and 23.1% for females.
And looking at the figures by age, by the way, we've referred to that already, the unemployment rate 61.8% for persons aged 15 to 24. That's quite incredible. It's also an extraordinarily high 18.4% for patients, not patients, for persons aged 25 to 74 years. Owen, you just wanted a quick one.
Yeah, just to touch on what Ciara mentioned as well, there was an article in the Irish Times the other day, and I know we mentioned it in our news as well, but a bit of positive news. The number of people claiming the PUP fell below 400,000 for the first time this year. That's according to figures from the Department of Social Protection. So that ties in really with that CSO release as well. It's the latest figures on the state support for those who have lost their jobs in COVID-19. It shows that just less than 400,000 people are getting the PUP.
It also, in that CSO figure, says 8.1% of all PUP recipients are certified as attending full-time education. So it begs the question, if somebody's in full-time education, how are they claiming the pandemic unemployment payment? I know some have part-time work, but it's an interesting statistic indeed. That it, Ciara?
Yeah,
okay,
that's all.
Thank you indeed,
there.
And thank you, Owen. Ciara coming up shortly in a couple of minutes with the news. Also, by the way, we'll have full commentary, I should have mentioned, of all those hurling and football games this year. Certainly the home hurling games anyway. I don't know facility-wise how we'll be able to do on the away hurling games. We'll have full commentary of the football games. Our commentary teams will be operating under huge constraints this year, all the pandemic issues that come into play and stuff like that. But sure, we'll get over it. Anyway, back to some of your messages. Thank you so much for those who are sending messages in during the course of the morning. Let's see that I get to all of those. Barry in Buncloddy, to Newtown. Barry in Buncloddy. Not sure what Shannon is getting on today. I haven't time, Shannon, to deal with that at the minute. St. Mary's Church, Lucan, 27th of May, 1972. Maria in Clane met her first communion. My God, Maria, there you were, resplendent in your little bridal outfit. Your lovely little white handbag, the white gloves, the knee-high white socks, the white shoes. Oh, that's the rig out, as I remember them anyway. And your mum and dad pictured in the photograph looking very smart indeed. Do the kiddies make their first communion in their school uniforms these days, I think? Owen, do they?
Let's jump over here. I think they might.
Right, okay, right, in regards to that. Let's see anyway. Thanks for the photo in that. I'm shocked to hear Owen Harris is finished with the Sunday Independent. He was the driving force behind Mary Robinson's election and a big thorn in Sinn Féin policies. Well, he was. You're right. But obviously under completely false pretenses. The idea that he was operating behind a fake Twitter account, slamming people, is quite incredible. Completely unethical, unprofessional and unacceptable. He has blown all sorts of any credibility that he might have had. Love it, Clem. Really put him under pressure. How is this allowed in the first place? It's utterly scandalous. What was government policy then? That's in regards, I think, to the other issue. Another photograph coming in, which I can't quite make out at the minute. One person, I look at some of the other messages. I need to take a break and go to the newsroom.